Budweiser. Good afternoon, everybody. You're now live on the Middleman Radio. This is the Middleman Talk Show, and I'm Alan.
And this is Kevin.
And this is Nick.
It kind of threw you off a little bit, didn't it?
It's just the Three Musketeers today, man. You know, it's just us. Maybe our lovely queen will be here after a while.
I'm sure we'll see it.
Yeah. I'm good, though. I hope everything's all right,
though.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's where the birds be boo-booing there.
Wouldn't it?
He's gone. Like, really? That's how we doing?
I said that's where those birds boo-boo at a lot. Remember when you used to shine your truck in the same parking space there? Cleaning your rims out and all that good stuff.
Right. Right. You gotta hate that.
That's
just dirty,
man. Just saying.
That's just dirty.
Just saying, brother. What's going on, man? What's going down? A lot going on in America, man. A lot going on this planet, man.
It is.
We seeing something special.
Hey, listen,
what we're seeing is
what I feel is a slow awakening of members of the majority community. And I have to give a big shout out. Yesterday in Gulfport, there was a very, very peaceful protest of which members of the community and the police were involved.
Right.
Somebody tried to, you know, sow the seeds of something a little bit more non-peaceful, but they attended to it, they took care of it, and we always call them out when they're wrong, so I feel like we got to give them props when they do great. Shout out to Gulfport Police Department, you know, for handling that situation and for standing in solidarity with the protesters. So, I will say that the rest of the country could probably take a lesson from Gulfport, Mississippi's police department, because they were a great example yesterday.
Well,
and that's,
some of these
man,
other
look,
people in other places ain't acting right.
But that's what they need to see. Like, they need to see stories like that, because you can still come out and be in solidarity as well. Or if you do not,
absolutely,
you don't have to be in a non-threatening position to allow me to speak my voice, right? If we're protesting peacefully,
right,
like, you don't have to send the police to block off a certain area with riot gear. Now, they can be in front of the businesses if you are, you know, scared about your business or whatever. But, you know, post them along that way. Post them along the routes of, you know, where people will be, you know, marching and protesting instead of antagonizing or making it seem like we're here to, you know, inflict fear or control, because that's what I see
when I see the videos
or the pictures. So yeah,
you know that's their job, though, Al. That's their job.
I
mean,
that's
the image.
But there's still other ways to do it, though. There are ways to do it.
Well, I agree. But you know, ever since our police departments have been militarized and they train with Jewish people, Israel, they've been straight monkey. Acting stupid out here. Did y'all see the old man that got pushed down? What was that in Buffalo?
Yeah.
That hurt my heart, man.
Buffalo, New York.
That hurt my heart, man.
Well, I think what hurt my heart even more is the fact that the 57 officers of the emergency response team resigned their posts in support of the two officers who were suspended for pushing that man down. I think that hurt my heart more than anything. It is important to note this, that even though they resigned the emergency response team, they are still active policemen. They are just resigning their posts from the emergency response team. So think about that, all of our citizens of Buffalo who are listening in. Those people who decided to stand with their brothers in blue who were clearly wrong are still active police patrolling where it is that you live. So please, you know, proceed with caution. That's the best way I can say.
Right. If you're listening live to the Middleman Talk Show and you want to get in on this conversation, the number to dial in is 516-387-1542. That's 516-387-1542. Press the number one on your phone. We'll definitely get to you in the host queue. My bad. Kevin, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, man, my thing is, man, for them guys to just walk out and quit, like you said, Nick, it speaks volume. I mean, it's like gang members, man. You know what I'm saying? They ain't going to turn their back on their homie. Gang members. Matter of fact, we did a show like that a while ago, too, about the police department. And they definitely acting like gang members right now.
Not all.
One thing also, you know. Well, not all of them. I'm not going to indict the whole police department because I do have friends.
Right.
I'm just saying, let's clarify.
Yeah.
Not all police are acting like gang members. There are a few because it's like saying all black people are criminals. That's
correct.
Not true. So my statement, I rescind, but I do say some police are acting like gang members.
Right.
One other thing I would like to say, to everybody that listened to our show last week, we do appreciate you. I know this week we did put out that we're going to do a show on home ownership. We're definitely still putting that show together, so please make sure you join us on Facebook, on our fan page, our Middleman Talk Show page, and we're going to have that information up soon. We just want to make sure we have the right people on the show for you guys with the right information. So, you know, right now there's a lot going on, as we stated earlier when we started the show. But we're going to get past this, and then we're going to get back to what we need to be doing with some of the things we're talking about today with prosperity. My bad,
right.
Al. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to just touch on one other thing as well. If we have a few more seconds for hot topics. So I want to talk about Roger Goodell's apology and also Drew Brees. All right. My thoughts, I ain't taking not one word, okay? You miss several opportunities, and this is the NFL, right? You miss several opportunities to have some type of plans in place or some type of message or whatever. But now you are saying that, you know, we apologize, you know, we misunderstood, now we understand. What do you mean? Same thing with Drew Brees. Like, how did you not know what, you know, your fellow gridiron player, Colin Kaepernick, was kneeling about? Like, he clearly stated, people clearly stated, it was clearly stated.
He knew.
Exactly.
Here's the thing about it. Let's take the veil off of it. This is why I say,
let's go.
You know, I get some slack on it, but this is just true. It's time for us to stop talking to some white people about racism.
It is.
I am tired of trying to explain to people where it's clearly been explained over and over again. And it's like a good friend of mine said yesterday when we sat down in my living room and talked. He said, you know what, there are some people that are just being contrarian just for the sake of it. And when you have a situation like that, there's no reason for us to talk anymore. I can deal with someone being ignorant to something. I cannot deal with willful ignorance. I will not deal with willful ignorance, and that time and energy can be used in other spaces.
That's correct.
Just like the rest of the NFL news, and now because it's popular, you know, to stand on Cap's side, now everybody's coming back in there. Hindsight is 2020. It's just like a friend of mine in Texas posted on her page the other day. She posted a meme where somebody was in a protest and a white guy was approached a sign, and it said, if you ever wonder what you would do during the civil rights movement, you're doing it right now. And that's what it is. I don't know any other way to say it.
Wow. I like that. That is true, man. That is true. Man. Kevin, you got any thoughts, man? I mean, add to that? I mean, I know you are a Dolphins fan, but, you know, what are your thoughts?
Steve Ross is a big supporter of Donald Trump, and I'm like, man, I ain't really studying that dude. I like my team because I like my team.
Right.
And on the back end of Drew Brees, you know, just if you say something out your mouth, like Nick, you know, alluded to, man, you know everything you meant when you first said it. If I tell somebody I don't like this or I'm this or this, that,
that's what you mean.
That's premeditated. That's what you mean.
That's what you mean.
You already knew what you was going to say.
Yeah.
You knew what you were going to say. And
that's
how
you feel.
Right now, we have to be very careful with social media, and we have to be careful with media. Because they are changing the narrative of how things are going. And like right now, we have to be very careful of how they're approaching the people in white America. I'm just be real with you. Because you bag somebody in a corner and they already, you know, you got some that are mentally unstable. They can take this stuff and turn it to a whole nother level of issues real quick. Mm. So that's just my thought on that.
Well, I mean, speaking to, you know, today's show, Black Prosperity, it's time to get what ours. We need ours. Substance over the fluff, right? We need that. So some of the things which we're going to talk about today, like how can we tackle the financial disparities in the African-American and people of color communities? How can we tackle that? What can we do? How can we ensure that the proper people that we are elected are the ones in which we're going to support our agendas? How can we get those proper people in those positions? What are some of the resources we can own to help increase our wealth? Regarding black ownership, how can we get more of the resources amongst ourselves as well? Like, how can we keep it flowing? And what do we need to do to ensure that our money that we are accumulating in our community is recycling back into our own hands, into our own businesses? And is this possible for every state? And also, too, in the grand scheme of things, are our people willing to participate in this endeavor? Because the time is now. Like, the time is now to start. Like, we really need to be putting plans in place, things in which we want to see in our communities. We need to tackle these things. So on with our first question. What are some of the ways in which we can tackle the financial disparities amongst us? What are some of your thoughts? What are some of your ideas?
The biggest thing is, Nick is always preaching this. We have to learn financial literacy.
Literacy.
If we don't learn it, we will always be behind on everything that we do, because in this country, the dollar is king, regardless if you circulate it, hold it, or either just don't have it. That's the difference between a king and a pauper. It's everything. It's everything.
I don't know any other way to say it. Listen, we've been talking about this for 12 years on the show at this point. And it's one of those things where I could go into great detail, but the reality is it's just that. Please go back and listen to the show. We have to learn financial literacy. We have to learn financial discipline and responsibility. There are a myriad of ways to do it. There are a myriad of specialists, black and other races as well, who teach those things. And I say it all the time, Google is a wonderful tool. You know, Google is a wonderful tool. Look them up.
Yeah.
There are people that you can search online. There are people that you can search, you know, in your local area. Or you can just even look into YouTube, find tricks and trades and learn them. I don't know any other way to say it. We've talked about it for years. You have to take the action. You absolutely have to take the action.
Right. And that's, you know, understanding financial literacy in general, you know, you definitely want to have a good understanding of money, understanding how to save it, and understanding how to grow it, and being mindful of how you spend your money. And so, like, you definitely want to have all of those particular aspects as well, too, because I know that, you know, like, we all want things, right? We all purchase a lot of things in which, you know, we look back at it because it's still sitting here 5 months later and we haven't even used it, right? Is that a
right.
part of it, too?
Right.
You know, guys, like, is that something we need to fix on that particular standpoint? Because, like, we all shop, but are we shopping the correct way? Could that help?
When you say the correct way, I mean, y'all know me. Like, at one point in time, you can call me a miser. You know, I'm cheap on certain things. But what I want, I will splurge and spend my money on. From a financial standpoint, you do have to assess where you are financially before you even look at shopping. Because if my bills ain't paid, I ain't spending no money, number one. Number two, if I don't have the monies to put back and save, that's really more so I want to make sure that I pay my bills, have something to save, something to invest. So a lot of times I think we will put ourselves in a situation where we don't invest money because we think we can't do it. But when you look at the totality of a month, you go out, you spend money on breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Equate all that money up. Look at the cigarettes you spend. Look at the liquor you may buy. Look at all the things that you buy and take into account of it. And once you put all that together, take some of those things away so you can invest. A good friend of ours, Marco Jones, shout out to him, man, because he is the main reason why we're doing this show today. He's been posting up some links on Facebook. If you're not following Marco Jones, follow this guy. He's been posting up where you can day trade, basically buy stocks, sell them, buy them low, sell them high, get in and get out, get your money. I know it's a very risky situation in certain aspects, but he's going step by step, showing people how to follow along with him to gain money. Now, you may not have a lot of money to play with, but, Al, you know, Nick, you know, how much money does it really take to get into the stock market? $20 you win a game. $25 you win a game.
It's easier than ever. You know, I think about just over the last, 3 days? I'm not going to give you my exact numbers, but, you know, just between myself, just a text chain between myself, my wife, my best friend, and his wife.
Right.
We all made increases in our shares and our profits just trading on Robinhood. You know what I mean? Like it's not like it was years ago. And I was just telling a friend of mine about this the other day. I kind of kicked myself because when I was a kid, my dad tried to teach me the stock market. But you know, this was back in the day when you were when you were watching it on TV and you seeing the little bars go by, and then you know you had to have a broker and call the broker. I think but now just seeing it and gaining that interest in it, and just like Kev said, it's easier than ever. Look, take one of those days where you guys have been ordering Uber Eats, and that $30 because it takes to get to one meal because you know how expensive it is. Take that $30 and start trading. Again, there are resources out there, just like Kev said.
Right.
There are resources all over that can show you just how to get started, you know. So, and in terms of how we shop, listen, African Americans are the number one consumers in the country.
That is.
Right? You want to know one of the easiest ways to get started? And I will call it an endorsement, call it whatever you want, but I really and truly appreciate this website. WeBuyBlack.com.
WeBuyBlack,
If you are already shopping on Amazon or eBay or Etsy or any of these other platforms, I guarantee you that 60% of the things that you're looking for on those platforms are also on WeBuyBlack. They've got black owned toothbrush companies, light bulb, soap, detergent. You know,
everything.
Mouthwash, Band-Aids, you know, all these things, underwear, all the stuff that you're already going and you're buying anyway, just make a conscious effort to buy black, you know.
Yep.
Even if you only do this once a month, you know, just think about what that kind of change. If black consumers just once a month made a concerted effort to purchase from our own people, think about how you can change. Think about that. Think about how that $5, $10, $20 may change when it's coming from 13% of the population once a month. That is what you would call game changer.
I agree.
That's true.
I don't know if you all saw this earlier this week, but speaking, you know, as far as distribution of wealth, right? So Robert Johnson, you know, the founder of BET, you know, spoke earlier this week on Fox News about CSNBC about reparations, and he proposed the number $14 trillion. So out of that $14 trillion, when I went to the U.S. Senate, just to see, right? Of course, we're still listed as 13% of the population, which I don't understand that particular number, which could be due to lack of, you know, filling out the census, or maybe those numbers.
Yeah, definitely
I don't know,
lack
right?
of filling out the census.
So in reference to that number, right, he proposed that every descendant of a slave could receive $350,000 direct cash payment over the next 10 to 20 years. Now, that's just $350,000 if I'm looking at it per person, not $14 trillion, but that's from that $14 trillion. So from that, the census, we have 330 million people in the United States. Black people are only – the number that I calculated is only 44 million black people in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that number – 14 trillion, the 360K. Would that suffice? I mean, is that what people are looking for when we are discussing the word reparations? Is that all we're looking for? Is just the money?
Well, the education part is a factor. I know. Yeah, I'm just saying the education part is a factor. It harkens back to the Dave Chappelle show.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our people ain't gonna do right. They gonna be out there like Tron buying cigarette trucks and everything else.
Right.
But I think if we are allotted to get that amount of money, we should have to go through a course to teach us, and that should be a part of the reparation education, not just financial education, but education period.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be mandatory for, I ain't gonna say all these grown people out here, but for our children. To be able to go to any HBCU that they choose. We want to target the schools. We want to target what they're going to learn, not force them to learn it, but kind of target the things that can help our community out. I don't know if that would go over well with everybody, but that's just my little thought process with the reparations.
I agree, Kevin. Like, if we're going to talk about, reparations and making sure black prosperity, exists and grows, like, we have to bring education to the forefront in general, right? Because we have a bunch of educational systems in several parts of every state that does not have proper funding, does not have the proper, technology and resources that people would need in order to get the so-called quality education, right? And so, yes, we have to tackle that. We also have to tackle, like, what are we teaching? Like you said, like, what are we teaching?
Yeah.
Are we preparing them for the jobs that we have now, or are we just preparing them for a robotic situation? Because we also have to look at the standpoint too. Like, everybody is not going to go to college, right? And that's realistic.
Right.
But are we helping those people to identify other forms of employment where they can live a successful life? So we have to tackle that as well too.
Okay. Well. Can I say this real quick? And this is not the most popular opinion, but I mean, it kind of is what it is. If you give $350,000 over a 10 to 20 year period to any consumer base, what you're going to do is you're going to drive up the market value. All of your cost of living are going to go up. All of your products and goods and services are going to go up. And then there's always the issue of who gets it. Because then all of a sudden you're going to see an uptick in people from other communities getting a 23andMe test and saying, oh, I'm 2% African.
Well, they've already done that. They've already done it with Native Americans.
Here's the solution. Here's my solution, and everybody has their own individual thoughts on this. First, I don't think mm-hmm. it was predated to slavery. There were no records kept, and there's no way, unfortunately, I don't particularly trust a country that's been able to spend everything that they've quote-unquote given to its citizens since the Constitution was written. So it's a very big gray area when you put that through the guise of American descendants of slavery. It is much mm-hmm. more clear, much clearer when you put it through the descendants of Jim
right.
Crow. That's a very clear delineation.
Yeah, yeah.
For us, our parents
he's
and our grandparents.
Yes.
Exactly. Our parents
yes.
and our grandparents experienced Jim Crow, which was
mm-hmm.
just as damaging as most of the other
mm-hmm.
atrocities that have happened to African Americans throughout history. So I think you
yes.
start there. That's the first place. The second place, I think that funding, first, equal funding to all of our universities. One of the biggest problems that I have with government
right.
funding of schools is that HBCUs get X amount of dollars when they are a public or state school. It makes no sense to me. I think that across the board, now we can have the argument for private colleges. If you are a state-funded school, there's no reason that Georgia State should be getting more money than Alabama State.
Right.
Right.
There's no reason that Mississippi State should be getting more than Alcorn State. There's no reason
right.
that Louisiana State should be getting more than Southern or Grambling State. When you are state funded, there should be an equal disbursement of funds
mm-hmm.
across the board. Again, we can
mm-hmm.
make an argument for private colleges, but there should be equal funding across the board. What it then takes is a concerted effort from our HBCUs to say, okay, we have way too many majors right now, and some of those majors are underperforming. One of the biggest disconnects when it comes to HBCUs and the black community is to Kev and Al's point that not everyone is going to college. But if there is a healthy amount of funding into trade programs at those same HBCUs,
yep.
now we can get into
yep.
this, because now that young man that wants to get a trade in something like forklifting or HVAC can go to an HBCU.
Mm.
And they can get an affordable education to go into a trade that is going to be a transferable skill that they can use to generate funds for the rest of their life. They can go
that is
to
correct.
Jackson State and be a plumber. They can go to Xavier or Dillard or whatever the case and be a dental assistant. You get what I mean? And that at
yeah.
that point, now you have people who are working. There are 4 million unfilled trade jobs in the United States right
mm-hmm.
now that pay on the low end $50,000. So we're talking about the mid five figures going into the low six figures. What type of influx could that be for the black community?
Mm.
But one thing before we move on, I was going to say this too, Nick. You're right. There's a lot of skilled jobs and other type skilled jobs that are unfilled. But the thing is, like I mentioned it on the show a while ago. When the last time y'all seen like bricklayers and seen a black crew? I've only seen that once, and I was shocked to see them. There's no carpenters, no plumbers, no electricians. All these things are things that we can actually start in and eventually own.
Mm-hmm.
If you got your own company, think about it. We get the reparation, and we're allowed to get that reparation. We'll have the resources at that particular point to fund our business, because
yeah.
you have that money
yeah.
coming in as a secondary means, and then
yeah.
you'll have the company that you own as your first means of income. So
yeah.
I don't know if they would give it to us, because if some people out there truly thinking, man, we have Black Wall Street. I'm gonna leave it at that.
I mean,
go ahead, brother.
I mean, you're right. So like the question is like, what are those resources that we can get to increase our wealth, like you named some, right? Those, you know, carpentry, you know, brickland, you know, construction, things like that. There are other resources out there as well, too, that we can get into and,
yep.
you know, to bring to our community. One of the, you know, great things that Nick brought up on the show was, you know, the buyblack.com. You know, like buyblack.com got
mm-hmm.
tons of resources, right, that
we typically
use. We buy black, excuse me, webuyblack.com. Excuse me, my people. Like we have those resources. How can we get that on a level
in which that it works for all of us? How can we get it to that level? How can we get those resources there?
That's what we have to plan now.
Think of where we get our resources now, right? And think of who controls those particular resources.
Yeah, we don't own nothing. The only thing that we have out there is black farmers. We got black farmers, but when the last time we were able to buy directly from them? Hey, matter of fact, Nick, can we buy directly from black farmers in every state?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do we go about doing that? Because I know you've talked about that before.
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to find those farmers. That's the first thing. Generally, what happens is, you know, you can go if that is something that they have as a part of their business model. You can go and purchase goods there. And I know actually several people, just even in my neighborhood. As a matter of fact, my cousin's godmother does that. She goes up to a black farmer, she buys her goods there, she comes back down and she resells them, and she does a wonderful job, wonderfully financially during the season. I think one of the better ways to do it, because black people, black neighborhoods disproportionately have food deserts. So at that point, I think it's really incumbent on us to reach out to those black farmers and establish with some of this land that we do have and we are able to access. We need to be having, there's no reason that if you're in a black neighborhood that you should not be having some type of farmer's market once a week where people can go and they can buy fresh foods and fresh vegetables. And I mean, the access is there. We just have to be, we have to be conscious of the effort. You know, if you know the pastor of such and such church in your neighborhood, go talk to them. Hey, can we use the back lot on Saturdays? Look, we'll make a donation to the church once a month. You know, and let's get some tents, get some tables, and let's have a farmer's market so we can help to get some of these. Because that also goes into our health. You know,
yeah,
we're disproportionately affected by diabetes. We've had eating habits that have been, you know, since we got here, from just being forced to make do with whatever we had.
Right.
You know, looking to see if there are, and I know it sounds like I'm just dropping, you know, places for people to go and everything, but
those are resources
out there. Just in my hometown, Gulfport, Mississippi, there's 34th Street Holistic Garden where you can go and buy a plot of land and farm and grow food there. You know, you can grow fruit and vegetables there. And I mean, it's very affordable. I want to say it's like $25 a year, and it's black owned. Do you get what I mean? And you can go there and you can farm, and you can grow, and you can learn how to grow. These are resources that are here and they're available. We just have to be conscious about going after them. You know, you just, every time you go into Walmart and you see that cucumber there, and you're like, man, the price is too high for that. Think about that the next time. Or if you go to the grocery store that's in your neighborhood that doesn't have all of those things, and you're wondering, well, why are you even here? Who owns this grocery store? Do they employ people of this neighborhood? Do they contribute to this neighborhood? Or do they just open their doors, make their money from this neighborhood, and then take their money somewhere else?
That's real. Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, like, you know, when Nick was speaking about, like, grocery stores, right? Like, think about how many, like, think about when we were coming up, Kev, like, you know, in the neighborhood in which we grew up in, right? We had two stores within maybe two blocks.
Walking.
If
yeah,
not
walking
mistaken,
distance.
They were, like, right. They were, like, black owned, right? And so what if those people were actually, you know, to come together and actually make an actual grocery store? I think with the volume of people that we had living at that time and even stopping through at that store, like, kept those stores going, because those stores are still there to this day. You know, 30 years later, those probably longer than that. I'm just speaking from my time frame.
Well,
30 years
only,
later,
yeah, only one of them. Yeah, one of them closed down. But, you know, to your point, man, there was another one. There was three stores actually in that area. One a little bit before your time. It was a black-owned grocery store. I remember my grandfather used to go in there, and him and the guy knew each other. Nick, you probably seen this before too. He would go in, get everything he need. He'd give him a note, and the note basically is, "When I get paid, I'm gonna come back and pay you."
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? He'll let you come in, get your stuff, and go on about your business.
I owe you. Yeah.
Yep.
And
so
see,
I mean,
the
they had that relationship.
Even if it's not black owned, there is nothing wrong with holding people accountable for what they're doing for the community. The grocery store that was in my neighborhood growing up, it was called Gamble's. It was owned by a white man named David Gamble. And he was white, but you know what? Everybody in that store was from the neighborhood. My first job was there. Mm. Most of my friends, we all worked there. He made an investment into the neighborhood. You know, he sponsored our baseball team. He gave money to our churches. He made an actual investment into the neighborhood. So it's not even just necessarily about being black owned, but who is supporting our community? Who is knowing that in their place they are making money off of our community and they're making a sound investment back into the community? Because one thing I will say about that store was protected. People did not break into that store, did not try to rob that store because they knew, hey, my little sister works there. My little cousin works there. My mom works there. No, you're not about to go in there. And you're not about to kick in any doors, man, because that place is making sure that my mama has food on the table, literally and figuratively. If you make that investment back into the community will take care of you.
I think that's a part of the substance where we, like you said, Nick, we need to hold them accountable. Anybody in our neighborhood, you know, don't come around and just basically just taking money out of our community and circulating it everywhere else. You know, that's something
that goes
we definitely
black
have
folks
to
too.
Stop.
That goes for the black folks, too, because I'm sorry, all kinfolk ain't kinfolk. And the reality is this. If you are a detriment to the neighborhood, I know everybody's like, man, I don't snitch. If you are a detriment to the neighborhood, black or white, you got to go.
It needs to happen.
Because ain't doing no but hurt.
It needs to happen. But, you know, I was just kind of thrown off by, Al, just a moment ago was, you know, I'm looking at, now, for everybody, give them the website again, Nick. What's the website?
WeBuyBlack.com. There are a couple things about the website real quick before you go forward, because actually right now what they're doing, and I think this will be a great way to start off, they have something called the Big Black Bag. And you can get a bag of the top-rated black-owned products, including a free We Buy Black T-shirt. And it's like a sample bag of all the products that they have there. And that's a good way to start and just see what kind of products they are. So they're actually in the process. They did their first round of funding last year. They're actually in the process of starting up it's called Soul Food Market. It's going to be a natural store, very similar to an Earth Fair or Whole Foods Market, the whole nine. They did their first round of funding via crowdfunding, and they purchased the building in Atlanta, and they're getting ready to do their second round of funding. It was going to start right before everything happened with COVID, so to do all the renovations. But, I mean, it's going to be black product producers in this store, you know, black farmers, black holistic items, you know, creators.
Man, that's dope.
All of that, you know, and what I would love to see for it eventually is I would love to see, much like Whole Foods and Earth Fair and all these other places,
let's do it.
That we do see a chain of these, a Soul Food Market in Birmingham, a Soul Food Market in Macon, in Montgomery, in Gulfport, in Jackson, New Orleans, and just so forth and so forth. There are people that are making those strides. I think we need to support them. You know, again, y'all have screwed off, like, let's be honest, even the broke person screwed off like $300 a month.
Speak on it.
You know, we're talking, look, at this point, we can't be PC about it. You know, call the weed man one less time this month and just put some money towards, you know, that's an investment, you know, that's an investment for all you areas where they are
also voting on whether or not to legalize weed. You know, this is the time to get in on cannabis. Mm-hmm. This is the time. That weed man that's been supplying the community for all them years, you know, that person needs to get his business together so he can apply for a license for a dispensary. Should they be in that area? So
you already know a big dollar industry
that we have already been locked out of, and we have been the biggest
mm-hmm.
victim
yes.
of the incarceration
of
based
mm-hmm.
on marijuana. So, you know, it's
right.
just trying, it's time to kind of shift focus on that.
I agree. I agree.
Now, one thing I want to bring to y'all's attention, and we were just talking about black farmers, and I just did a quick
mm-hmm.
search real quick, and there's a website called shopblack.usa, and that's shop with a P-E, shopblack.us. That right there, hey, I'm going to show you, there's a black-owned farmer around not too far from me, and I need to be
wow.
shopping with these people. And I mean, literally, they're in my same town.
And see,
oh,
I think that's the thing too, Kevin. I think it's that, like, either we don't know, or we as a business, maybe we don't have the financial means to get our business out there like it should. Because if he's not too close by you, there's no reason why all the black people in your area don't know about this particular guy or know
Kevin
where they can get some fresh, you know, vegetables and fruit from. And so, like, I think that's another, you know, part of it as well, too, is the maybe the connectability, you know, the access to people, the access to making sure that your brand gets out there. But also, too, let's speak back on the word support. Like Nick was saying, you know, we got to find more ways if we're saying we're going to find more ways to reassure that the money is circling back to us. Like, we have to make sure that we're spending our money where we need to be spending. And when it's time to support our people, like, we do need to support. But I think it's a situation of, man, I'm trying to describe the feeling of, you know, how the standpoint of a guy trying to hand you his mixtape and then you kind of look at him sideways. That's the feeling
yeah.
that I'm trying to describe, in which I think some of our, you know, the people who need the support are getting that same treatment. So
one
does that make sense?
Part, one of the biggest
how can
things,
we combat that?
One of the biggest things, even with us shopping with each other, man, we got to recondition ourselves, number one. When you shop with black people, you can't go in and say these people are too high or they cost too much, because you got to think about it. They're actually, if they're not a chain, they're going to pay more for those items to be able to resell it to you at a smaller markup to you as a larger markup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go to McDonald's, they buy millions of patties for millions of stores. But if you got Miss Jones over here making hamburgers and she's buying them
right.
from the local spots,
mm-hmm.
she's going to have to pay for that and be able to make a profit. She can't feed you at the bottom line cost. So if you look at it, when you spend money with them, eventually, the more you spend with them, the more they'll be able to buy, the more they can look at their price and fluctuate it when they need to.
But how
so
can they get that support?
Here's the thing, and this is the part, because I know we have quite a few business owners who also listen to the show. This is where I'm talking to you. This is where cooperative economics comes into play. Because let's use an example. Kevin has a wing spot. I've got a wing spot. Al's got a wing spot. Now, we know that we're not hitting the threshold to get X amount of goods for this price. But we're all in the same industry. There is no reason that as business owners, Kevin, Alan, and myself should not come together, go back to that same distributor and say, listen, we're going to make a larger purchase because we're purchasing for all three of us. But in order to do this, we need a price break. I guarantee you they will. They do it all the time.
Yeah.
So
correct.
There are plenty of industries that are, you know, plenty of black business owners in a specific area that are within the same industry. Cooperative economics has to come into play.
Mm-hmm.
In California, actually, there is an organization called it's called BOPSA, the Black-Owned Beauty Supply Store Association. That's one of the main things that they do. they buy in bulk and they buy together and they get those price breaks, which means you can lower your prices a bit to be competitive in the market. Now, there's a second part to that. As consumers, you cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you have a bad experience with a black-owned business, you can't say, well, this is why I don't shop black-owned. No, because you don't do that. You don't do that with McDonald's. Now, you go to McDonald's every day.
Every day.
The ice cream machine's been broke at McDonald's since 1996.
Still going back.
And y'all still going in there. So it's the same thing. Now, there's nothing wrong with saying, look, I have no problem going to a black business and say, hey, man, you know, my customer service, it really wasn't, because I'm a big, customer service is a big thing for me. Hey, man,
it really
wasn't that hot this time around. I'm still going to give you a try, you know, but, you know, can you kind of beat that up for me? Now, if they choose not to, then I can simply stop as a consumer consuming that black business. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to X out every other black business around. And that's the mentality that you have to get out of it.
Nick, also, don't go back and tell everybody you know just because your experience was bad and say, hey, don't go shop with him, because you're cutting off possible clients for that person. The only thing you have to do is say, hey, this is what I experienced. If you go there, hopefully you experience something different. I choose to spend my money with another brother. That's just as simple as it gets, because when we sit up there and close off a whole business, that business drive and die. Plus, you have to give that person enough time to improve on the things. Like Nick said, go in with constructive criticism. Not going in, hey, man, you suck, your service suck, your food suck, your building nasty, blah, blah, blah. You can sit back and tell these people something without being ignorant and ugly.
And that's real,
because
too,
they're going to react.
Right. And then you also got to think, too, like your experience will possibly stop 25 to 50 more people from coming, you know, that could possibly have a better experience. You know, also, too, like Nick said, you know what I'm saying? Like, your bad apple can't spoil it for everybody else. And the mentality of, like, that whole quote, which is, this is why, you know, I have a hard time supporting black business, or, you know, I try to do right by my people, but they always do me wrong. Like, go back and provide that constructive criticism, or just make a call, or send them an email, or find another service to, you know, meet your particular need. But I think, like, when we say things like that, like we're putting things in the air that ruin it for everybody else too. And we don't need to like put that out there like that. You know what I'm saying? I see we got a caller. Let's go ahead and bring in our caller.
Hey, what's going on? It's Mitty out of Phoenix. What's going on, fellas and ladies?
What's going on, bro?
Man, another day in paradise. You know, I hear y'all talk business and stuff. See, my issue with black people in business is that we're so hard on each other. It could be like you get three ice cubes instead of four, and you want to go on Yelp and somebody, that's why you don't do black business. It's like, let's say like a black restaurant. I got my DoorDash coming from this black chicken sandwich spot. They got the off the chain, right? But as we come in a few moments, but if they run out of something, that's because they're mom and pop. They ain't Red Lobster or Applebee's run out of something. It's because we don't have the distribution, the farm, and things of that sort. And a lot of times, we got to start these businesses our own money. But I hate it how that we be so hard on each other. Bad mouth each other in public. But we'll steady, with a smile on our faces, take Chinese food behind bulletproof glass. Or like... We all seen that stuff, and no seats even sit down in. But in bad service on these places, it's like, look, you see these videos of black women getting beaten up at these snail shops, or like black people getting followed around these stores, but we steady go there. But if someone takes 5 extra minutes on an order, we ready to cut off the black person. That's how we going to do black business. And that, and what happens is, you only learn how to run a business in restaurants successfully by running it and making your mistake. It's because, like, out here in the Phoenix area, we got this Harold Chicken at the Chicago chain. Y'all probably know about that. Off the chain, right? I drove like 25 minutes to get it, right? And but they messed up my order. The food was good. The lady gave me, like, a couple of free sodas to kind of, like, make up for it, but I wasn't even tripping. But I was like, hey, the food was good. I ain't going to bad mouth them. I'll come back again when I'm in the area. And I'll say this one last thing. There's a fine dining spot by the base here in the Phoenix area, the Air Force Base. There's a black-owned fine dining spot. This black lady owns it. I used to go once a month when I used to live in the area. And she actually remembered me because I would go on my birthday to get a free dessert. And so we have to keep taking care of our own and passing it on because we don't have, like the guy started Chipotle, a daddy to loan you $70,000.
Right.
You know, we don't have that. And so the best thing we can do is support each other.
Tobias Smith.
All right, thank you.
Hey, Smitty, I got a quick question because I'm pretty sure you remember this place. Do you remember Calhoun Foods?
Oh, Montgomery, Alabama. Man, Calhoun, I used to go to school with the son. They had a hell of a run, too.
Exactly. That was what I was just about to say. Calhoun Foods was the largest black-owned grocery chain in the country. Mm. Calhoun Foods had its issues. Yeah, it did, as most businesses do. What I hated when I got there in 98, there were still quite a few in the area. People would say, oh, I didn't like my experience there. This is why I don't support any of them. Instead of just going to them and saying, hey, this is my experience. And instead of helping to try to improve it, it's just let me tear it down. I'm going to go to Winn-Dixie. I'm going to go to Walmart. Mm. I'm going to go to this. Well, here's the thing about Calhoun Foods. Calhoun Foods also had more black grocery store managers at a salary rate than any of the major chains. Any of the major chains.
Wow.
More salaried managers than any of the major chains. It employed people from the neighborhood. What happens to those jobs when you all of a sudden throw the baby out with the bathwater? What happens? Yeah, go ahead.
I'll say this, and like being from there, and I still go like once a year. I ain't gonna lie, Winn-Dixie got the off the chain Chex soda, so I ain't gonna lie to you, they off the chain. But you're right. If like employing, and what happens to black businesses, you employ black people. Like my stepfather, right? He owns his own auto shop for like about 30 some years now. His brother got caught up on a manslaughter charge, right? Did like 10 years. He got out. He's been working for my stepdad as his brother for like almost 20 years now. I ain't heard a peep. I got family members who got jobs working for black businesses that got out the pen. You make a mistake, you're able to bounce back also and get that job. You know, a lot of brothers go to jail. They want to have a job when they come out. They want to work. And that black business is that conduit to give them that job. Or even the 16-year-old boy who lived like in the neighborhood who wants a job after school, buy himself a little shoes, not ask his parents money all the time, take his little girlfriend to Chili's, you know. And those things like that are what the business did. Because Calhoun's, because I remember, like, out here, they got, like, a lot of Asian, like, a lot, it's a melting pot. She got, like, Middle Eastern grocery stores. But there's Asian grocery stores. I think it's Vietnamese. And everybody who worked there, except for the one white guy cut meat, was that nationality. The kids was at the cash register and bagging groceries. So their kids had some kind of job coming and making them feel they could do things. That's one reason we should have these black businesses, because that's a good way, because let's be honest here, they ain't hiring our children. Black children have, especially black male children, have got really high unemployment rate. They trying. And that you should be able to have those jobs where you can do those little things to make yourself feel like a man. Because we all had high school jobs. Let's say this real quick. We all had jobs after school or high school. Look how it made us feel as men coming up. You know, having to ask your mom and daddy for $20 every time. Those things like that will probably keep those kids out of trouble. May be able to help mom and daddy out if they hit a rough patch.
Oh, man. Increasing all type of responsibility. You know what I'm saying? Like, your eagerness for yourself to want more. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, having that pride to show that, hey, mom, I got it this time. You know what I'm saying? I could do it myself, you know, because, like, yes, most definitely. And we need to have more resources or more avenues for our kids to be able to get this particular, you know, knowledge and training. And because, like, once they become, you know, mini adults, in which some of us look at them as, like, you know, because we put them to work, you know, because if we're at home and we watch the TV, you know, we want them to get the remote, so that's a job for them anyway. But, you know, we want them to have some form of skill in which they can understand money, they can understand spending, they can understand saving, and understand pride of having something for your own as well, too, and growing it. Definitely growing
it. And it gives them experience. It gives them experience.
Yeah.
I was looking at demos.org, and, you know, black workers make up 11% of the retail labor force in the country, but they're just 6% of managers. Now, let's think about this. Just like that, just like he was saying, at that Asian-owned supermarket, that child working the register at a young age, probably knowing every aspect of that store, and more than likely will take over that store one day as the owner. But even if they went on to another establishment, they've got enough experience where they can come in as management.
Yep.
And trust me, when it comes to management and retail, a lot of people try to look at retail like it's dead-end job. Yeah, those managers, like over at Family Dollar, those store managers are making $64,000, $65,000 a year. I know folks with master's degrees that's not making $64,000, $65,000 a year.
Nick, Schmidt, I got something I want to bring to the whole conversation. I just wanted, I mean, everything we're talking about, even just reminiscing on how businesses were when we were younger, how it helped out the community. And we saw the tail end of it. We didn't get the chance to experience what our grandparents experienced with, you know, everybody in the neighborhood knowing everybody, all the store owners know everybody, and the doctors, and everybody still lived in the community. We didn't experience that. We're looking at the youth right now. We're looking at the community as it is right now. How can we truly get our community to participate in the thought process of self-wealth building and community building? Because I'm just looking at, if we did let everybody say, hey, man, let's get these black kids in here, let's get them some jobs, or let's get these adults over here and let's get them some jobs, let's bring these jobs in here, and we start creating, if we did get reparation, that's a key factor, if we did get reparation, how will we make sure and ensure that our people, number one, will recycle that money, Number two, participate in it, and how can we get that across this whole country? How can we make something like that happen? Because right now, the only thing we look at is our politicians come in, they tell us some BS, they promise us a whole gang of things, but we're still in the same position as we've been over the last past 40, 50 years. So how can we possibly put this in our people's mind and say, hey, look, if you want to build your community up, this is what we have to do, and are you willing to do it?
It's pride. What happens is, it's not like a family business, right? You got to have pride in that family business. And I use one example, the WWE, for example. Vince Jr. bought it from his daddy for like a couple bucks, right? Daddy moved on. But his daddy said, keep all these guys on who helped me make it to the WWF or whatever. And Vince's kids are wanting to continue that as well, and they putting their family into it. And so what happens is that I think a lot of times our kids haven't taught that concept of legacy, and also one concept of legacy is how we happen to most of our families. We just happen to become parents a lot of times and then worry about it later. It's all about planning in life. You got to have a legacy. You got to have a pride in that business. Be like, hey, my father built this, my mother built this, and I want to continue that. But I think that's part of it as well, and stop looking at everything as a quick buck. A business takes time. Mm-hmm. A business takes a lot of hardship, a lot of being told no, a lot of, you know, you may hit a bankruptcy or whatever. Because if your business is profitable, Donald Trump is a plumb idiot, right? But he is where he is because of his daddy. The Bushes are because of their daddy. Hillary Clinton is where she is, man, because her daddy putting her on. And like a lot of these corporations, see, they run by white people. Their parents invested the money or loaned them the money to get started. And that I don't have children, but let's say if I did, if I had something, I want them to make more than me and continue it. And I want to be able to say $10,000. I'm just using a number. They get started and build something to be that snowball for their family. That's the guy that had that pride and that, you know, that money and all that stuff.
Yeah, and to take that point a bit further, when we send our children to these lovely universities to get
mm-hmm.
this wonderful education,
mm-hmm.
we need to invest in them coming back. If you do own that corner store, first and foremost, don't give your child a lemon. That's the first thing, right?
Yes.
And when I say don't give them a lemon, the business is just not performing. Yeah, you would love for them to take it over and use that wonderful education to take the business to height, you know, unbeknownst. But don't tell them, oh, yeah, one day when I'm through with this, then you can have it. Then you can take it over. Give your child some dividends. Let that child
yeah.
actually see some money coming in from that business, because our children will have different visions than we do. Our children will have different dreams than we
yep.
do. But
mm-hmm.
I
That's
think
right.
they will have, I'm pretty sure they will have a vested interest in making that business better, because they know, okay, if I know I'm getting $50 in dividends per month from my dad or my mom's business, well, what can I do to help the business to increase the dividends that I actually get?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You
mm-hmm.
know, think about it like this. The children and grandchildren of Sam Walton, I'm pretty sure, all have all of their individual dreams and aspirations, but they made sure that Walmart was straight first, because that funds
yeah.
every single thing that they want to do. They don't have
mm-hmm.
to bootstrap every single thing that they want to do. They take care of their family business first, like somebody said, a legacy, you know, a dynasty, if you will. You know, so...
Mm.
We have to start being a lot more transparent. For those of us who are business owners, we have to be a lot more transparent with our children if, in fact, you do want them to take over your business one day. You can't just keep everything in-house. I make all the decisions. I do this. I do that. I do this. I do that. I reap all the benefits until I'm ready to put the business to the side, and now you can take it over. They've got no interest in it.
That's real.
Mm-hmm. Too late.
That's real.
They
have
real. Hey, fellas,
that's real.
Fellas, before we go, Smitty, are you still on with us, Smitty? I think he's over there eating that Harold chicken. Smitty.
yeah, he
eating that Harold chicken. I was going to ask him to give a shout out to that restaurant in Arizona, man. You know, we have a lot of travelers and a lot of people that go across the country. You never know. Might touch down in Phoenix. Might need to go
right
out there and get some of that food. So, I mean, if you're listening to the Middleman Talk Show, you know any black businesses, we do not mind you shouting them out. We have that. We don't mind doing that. If it's your business, shout it out. We probably need to spend money with you anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Go on our Facebook page. Come on air with us. Tell us about your business. Tell us what you got going on, especially if the show is fitting the topics.
And
that's
all
right.
The businesses that we've talked about today, we have placed them in the Middleman Talk Show Facebook group. So, guys, make sure if you are not a member of the Middleman Talk Show Facebook group that you go ahead and join. It's really easy to join. Just click that join button. Myself, Al, Kev, Jen will let you in. There are a lot of great resources there. There are a lot of great articles. And everything that we talk about on the show, we put in the Facebook group as well. So join the discussion.
Yes, sir.
Man,
the only thing,
great
please,
show today.
I would like to allow people posting on our site, but don't get on that spamming. Please don't spam. You can post. We want to approve it or not approve it.
Meaningful information.
Shout out to the Cotton Kings. Matter of fact, shout out to Chuck E. Charles, because he gave us a dope intro, and that thing bumped. My phone speaker sounded like it was about to come out my ear.
Most definitely. Oh, yeah.
Great show, Al. But, I'm going to get me some vegetables at this garden here soon, sir.
Man, do that and let us know your experience, man.
Now, see, it's been around the corner from you all these years.
I know. Man, don't rub it in. Please don't rub it in, because I feel bad as it is, man. I'm just saying, brother. It's, matter of fact, I posted up on our Facebook page. It's the ultimate list of black-owned farms and food gardens. Shop Black, and it's shop with a P-E, Black. It's on our Facebook page. Make sure you check that out.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, one up, one down. Jim, we hope you're doing well out there. Look forward to seeing you next week. Hopefully next week. Well, not hopefully. We will have a show for you guys next week that's going to be very informative. We definitely look out for the home ownership show that is coming. The series is called again, Nick.
American Dream.
Put you on the spot. I had to put you on the spot. American Dream.
American Dream. And again, it's a multi-part series where we will be going into essentially all these things that we've been told, you know, for generations, that this is how, the American Dream, this is how you get it. Quite frankly, there are some things that are no longer relevant. There were some things that were incorrect. We want to break those things down, but we feel that not just all of our listeners, but everybody who's not even listening to this show should have access to the things that make this quote-unquote American Dream work. So if
That's
you
right.
are a
mm-hmm.
listener, we want to make sure that please share the show. Make sure you share it with a friend. Send it in Facebook. Send it via text. Send it in a Facebook group that you're in. If you have a suggestion mm-hmm. for a show, if you're in a Facebook group about a certain topic and you'd like to hear the Middlemen do a show about it, please send that to us. You can hit us up on Facebook. You can email us at wearethemiddlemen@gmail.com. Trust me, we're always taking suggestions for the shows. And if you guys really knew how many shows that you suggested that we actually did, it will blow your mind. We're just not that great.
Right. Most definitely.
Shout out to Bill.
Hear me out. Shout out to Bill out there, man. Hear me out. I like that. Hear me out, man.
I'm looking forward to a new show from him. And of course, guys, I got to say this will be the last thing I say before the show ends, and I'll shut up. Guys, support black media. These types of discussions are not happening on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
They're not happening on CNN.
They're not even happening on your local news.
Support black media, whether it's the Middlemen Talk Show, whether it's Karen Hunter, whether it's Hear Me Out. You know, no matter what, support black media. This is a safe space for these type of conversations that have the nuance and the actionable steps that we can take in order to move our community forward.
Man.
And get your NAGA membership. Get your NAAGA membership. I don't want y'all to think I'm saying a bad name. National African American Gun Association.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shout out. Yeah, get it. You got to get that. Shout out to Jonathan Duo, man. Great podcast. All my podcasts, I told y'all, link with us. Share your stuff. You share our stuff. We going to do that. So get with it.
Absolutely.
Take it on.
Man. Hey, thank you for taking an hour out your day to listen to the Middlemen Talk Show. We will be back, of course, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Central. So add us to your podcast list and check us out, man, every Sunday. We always have something that we're going to bring to you to enlighten you or educate you or have a great discussion on. So we really appreciate everybody who called in today, and thank you for taking the time out. We out.
Hey, man, this thing right here bumping so hard. Play it in your car. Cheers.